Good morning. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6, and we'll be in verses 1 to 6. Brothers and sisters, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual or of the Spirit should restore them in a spirit of gentleness. Keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks that he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load. One who is taught the word must share all good things with the one who teaches. Right in the middle of this passage, there's a broad exhortation. Bear one another's burdens, and by doing so, fulfill the law of Christ. Then on either side of the exhortation are two specific scenarios. The scenario of restoring someone who's caught in a trap of sin, that comes right the first verse. And then at the end of the passage we read in verse 6, the example of sharing financially and in other ways with those who preach and teach the word. So what we're going to look at first is this broad exhortation. Bear one another's burdens, and so by doing so, fulfill the law of Christ. And I want to ask some questions about this exhortation. There's some ways that we're doing living this out really well as our church, and I think other ways in which maybe we need additionally to hear this word again and to hear more encouragement, exhortation to keep improving in this. So ask a few questions of this broad exhortation, and then look at these two specific examples. Someone caught in a transgression and taking care of our pastors, if we want to put it that way, as just two of many scenarios that we face that kind of exemplify what it means to bear burdens and see what principles we can learn from that. So, first, the big exhortation, then the two little examples. Bear one another's burdens, and by doing so, fulfill the law of Christ. So, first of all, what is Paul asking us to do? Well, bearing burdens, it sounds pretty broad, right? It's kind of underdefined. What could that entail? The two examples we're going to talk about give us a little direction. It's like, oh, it could be really varied things. It could be things as varied as making sure your pastors have enough, money to cover their rent so that they don't overwork themselves, or helping someone who's fallen in sin. That's a pretty broad range, and everything in between, right? So Paul doesn't obviously give an exhaustive list because there is no exhaustive list, right? This just can cover so many things. We can think of lots of examples. There are kind of spiritual needs, right? Like helping helping each other with sin. There's care type of needs, right? Needs for friendship. Some of us talk about feeling loneliness. That's a care need. That's a burden, right? That needs to be borne. Needs for wisdom, for prayer. Needs that I have in my life for other people to be examples to me, right? Those are all sorts of care type of needs. But then there's other types of needs, sort of more logistical kinds of needs, right? There's financial needs. There's people who are just great at organizing hospital visits and paperwork and that sort of thing. And in real life, most of these different kinds of needs, these care needs, these logistical needs, they kind of bleed together, right? It's hard to separate them out. If you ever want to sort of get a fuller list of the types of needs that burdens that are to be borne in our church, you just ask one of the deacons, and they will give you a list, right? And that takes us to the next. So what? Bear one another's burdens. What are these burdens? Well, they can be really broad, ranging from making sure pastors have enough money to helping someone you see caught in a sin and everything in between. Who is supposed to do this? Our next, so what? It's pretty broad. Who? Everyone. Who's supposed to be bearing these burdens? And this is an important thing to note. Notice here in the text in verse 2, bear each other's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Notice it doesn't say, this isn't addressed to the leaders of the church, right? It doesn't say, pastors, bear your people's burdens. Or people, you know, let the deacons bear your burdens. And so by doing so, they will fulfill the law of Christ, right? It says, brothers and sisters, bear each other's burdens, and by doing so, fulfill the law of Christ. It's not the leaders it's not the pastor's or deacon's job to be bearing all of our burdens, right? But it is what are they for? Well, they're there to help spur us on, to help notice and to delegate, right? So as we think about our pastors in light of this passage, what we should be looking for in our pastors is people who can teach us and equip us to be more faithful in bearing each other's burdens, right? Not people who we sort of expect to meet all the needs themselves, right? What I love to see in our elders are people who, you know, spur us on and say, hey, this is something we all should do, right? That's great. And I think with deacons, right, deacons are tasked with this responsibility to manage some care needs and logistical needs for the church. But I know for myself, it's easy to fall into this trap of thinking, okay, good, that's their job. I kind of give some money to the church, and they do that job for me, and I can do fun stuff, right? But that's not what this text says, right? Bear each other's burdens, not let the pastors and deacons do it all. So I like to think of deacons as something like chief delegators, right? As point people who are tasked with noticing, and then ideally, who can nudge us all out of our seats and toward burdens that need to be borne, right? Bear each other's burdens. The burdens are broad and are varied. It can be so many different things. Who's supposed to do it? All of us, right? And then why? Bear each other's burdens, and by doing so, fulfill the law of Christ. Whoa. So sometimes I think it's easy for me to think of bearing each other's burdens as this nice little extra thing that I do. Like, I do my quiet time, I come to church, and then if I want to be a really good Christian, I'll like take on one or two burdens that I can kind of bear to be a very mature, you know, person. But notice Paul here says not bear one another's burdens and so be an extra mature Christian. He says, bear each other's burdens, and by doing so, you will fulfill the law of Christ, right? In other words, in a sense, in bearing each other's burdens, this sums up what we're created for and what we're saved for, right? This images what God's heart for his people has always been and what Christ has done for us, right? Bear each other's burdens, and in doing that, you will be the person that God has created you to be and redeemed you to be. Fulfill the law of Christ. Let's just look at those two words for a minute. Fulfill the law of Christ. What does he mean when he talks about fulfilling the law? Well, we have to just go back to the last chapter where Paul talks about fulfilling the law. He's thinking of the law of Moses in the Old Testament. Look at Galatians 5. Verse 13, you guys were called to freedom, brothers and sisters, but what Christian freedom is not an opportunity for the flesh, but rather through love, serve one another. Through love, serve one another, bear each other's burdens, because the whole law, the whole Torah, is fulfilled in this one statement, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So what Paul sees here is that God's heart for his people in the Old Testament, given sort of through the law, was, yeah, there are so many like really random seeming things, but at the heart of it, the core of it, what God was really looking for and what he was really after was people that loved him with all their heart and loved their neighbor as themselves. And Paul says, when you through love serve one another, or when you bear each other's burdens, you're fulfilling that heart that God always was looking for in his people in the Old Testament. Right? Paul says the same thing in Romans 13 when he says, the one who has loved another has fulfilled the law, because the whole law, and then he quotes several of the Ten Commandments, is fulfilled in this one statement: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. And this, of course, is what Jesus himself says in the Gospels when he's asked, what is the greatest commandment in the law? And he says, well, there's two. First, love God with all your heart. And second, love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commands, the whole law and the prophets can be summarized, right? That's they hang on this. Bear each other's burdens, not what are they? Whatever they are, right? The whole range. Who is supposed to do it? All of you, all of us. And by doing so, you'll be fulfilling God's heart for his people. You'll be fulfilling the law. But Paul doesn't just stop and say, and so fulfill the law. He says, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Because on this side of the cross, God's heart for his people, God's law, is seen completely and perfectly expressed in Jesus, and especially as Jesus was the perfect burden bearer. Paul says earlier in Galatians, speaking of Christ, reflecting on what Jesus had done for him, he says, Jesus loved me and gave himself for me. What does it mean to fulfill the law of Christ? It means to image to others what Christ has done for us. We talk about how Jesus kept the law perfectly, right, for us. And that's true, but that has to mean especially that he loved his neighbor perfectly, right? That he, in fact, what it means for him to have fulfilled the law is, yes, he kept all of the commandments, but deeper than that, it means that he genuinely loved his neighbor as himself. And in fact, he loved his enemies perfectly. In love, he bore our burdens to the death. And Paul reflects on this idea in Romans 15, verse 1. We who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, to build him up, for Christ did not please himself. Bear each other's burdens and so fulfill the law, yes, and fulfill the law of Christ. Image what Christ has done for us. This goes back, really, to what Jesus himself said in John's Gospel, in John chapter 13, verse 34 to 35. When he says to his disciples, I'm giving you a new commandment. Now, is it a new commandment? No, because it's the premier commandment of the Old Testament. And yet, something about Jesus, what Jesus is about to do, imbues this old commandment with new meaning. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. And he doesn't just stop there. That wouldn't be very new. But you love one another just as I have loved you. You are to love one another. Bear each other's burdens, and by doing so, you will fulfill this law of Christ. You'll image to other people. You'll sort of reenact Jesus' own bearing burdens for us. This is done through the fruit of the Spirit. So, bear each other's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. The burdens are varied. All of us are called to this. We do this to fulfill God's heart for his people, and especially to reenact what Jesus has done for us as the perfect burden bearer. And then how? How are we to do this? There's a couple clues here in this text. Bear each other's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. And we just read in chapter 5 where it says, through love serve one another. The whole law is fulfilled in one statement: love your neighbor as yourself. And if we would keep reading just a few more verses in Galatians 5, we'd come upon a list called, that we commonly call, the fruit of the Spirit. And guess what's the first thing that's listed in the fruit of the Spirit? Love. Bear each other's burdens, and by doing so, you will fulfill the law, which the law is fulfilled in love, which is the premier fruit of the Spirit. What is Paul thinking? Well, I think he's thinking, we're going to see this a little more clearly in one of the examples that we look at next. How do we fulfill this command? How do we bear each other's burdens and by doing so fulfill the law of Christ? Has to be done by the Spirit, right? Because this love command is a fruit of the Spirit, right? And then there's another little clue here that love and the fruit of the Spirit is central to bearing each other's burdens. If we look at this little warning that Paul gives in verse 3 to 5, actually, bear each other's burdens and by doing so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he's deceiving. He's deceiving himself. Now, where else does Paul talk about, where else does Paul say that somebody is nothing? Anything spring to mind? 1 Corinthians 13. If I have all kinds of prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and knowledge and have all faith, but I don't have love, I am nothing. If I give everything I have away, deliver my body to be burned, but don't have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. It does not envy or boast. It is not arrogant or rude. If anyone thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. In other words, if anyone tries to do burden bearing apart from love, to use the original Greek term, that's not what we're looking for, right? Bear burdens, yes, but do it in love. This warning that Paul gives is related to verse 26 of chapter 5. Let us not become conceited, provoking each other or envying each other. Conceit can take a couple of forms, right? When we think about bearing each other's burdens, having conceit or sort of arrogance can take a couple of forms. It can tempt us to use other people or to ignore them, right? I can become conceited and be interested in bearing your burdens as a way of making myself feel superior to you, right? This is awesome. I'm the burden bearer around here. You're falling into traps and things that I would never struggle with. And so this makes me feel better about myself, right? And Paul says, that's not what I'm talking about. That doesn't fulfill the law of Christ, right? But there's also, we can become conceited, and that can lead us to ignore burdens that need to be borne, right? Dude, my life is okay right now. I just don't feel like getting into the mud with somebody else, right? It's just going to make my life miserable. So I'll just let them be with their problem, and I'll continue my life that's kind of at a decent equilibrium right now, right? And Paul reminds us, each one has to test his own work. Each one at the last judgment will have to bear his own load. In the end, we're going to stand before God by ourselves, and God isn't going to be comparing us to others at the final judgment and say, you know, you're a lot better than that other guy, so yeah, good report. No. God isn't going to be counting the notches in our belt, right? Oh, wow, how many people's burdens did you bear? Wow, that's amazing. But he is going to be looking for the fruit of the Spirit in us, for love. And so this, how does Paul call us to bear burdens? Bear burdens and fulfill the law of Christ, but do it in love, in humility, and in genuine care for each other, not as a means of sort of putting spiritual notches in your belt or something. Bear each other's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. This is sort of this big picture exhortation that Paul gives. But thankfully, Paul doesn't just leave it there. He gives us two very specific and very different examples of what this could look like in real life. And I want to just kind of briefly look at these as a way of just getting more, kind of thinking more about what we can learn from these two examples about the burdens that we are called to bear, the varied and, very, very varied burdens. So, two examples. The first one is a spiritual-sounding one, a care need, maybe we can call it, someone that is caught in a sin, restoring someone caught in a sin. And the second is kind of looking out for our leaders. So let's look at these two examples pretty quickly and just see how they can help flesh out this big exhortation that Paul gives. So chapter 6, verse 1. Let's read this verse again. Brothers and sisters, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual or of the Spirit should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. So first off, who in this particular example, so this guy that, you know, is walking his Christian life and gets stuck in a trap of sin and needs to be restored. Who is supposed to do this? Who's supposed to do the restoring? Yeah, so it says, you who are spiritual, right? And I think at first glance, we might be tempted to think, whoa, right? That's like a certain subcategory of people in the church, right? The spiritual, the really spiritual people. Because that's how we sort of use that word sometimes. And so we may say, okay, good, that's for the leaders, or that's for the really spiritual people, as we say. But that's not what Paul means here, right? How do we know that? Well, here's a summary from Tom Schreiner. The spiritual in here that Paul's talking about isn't a special elite group of Christians. Paul isn't restricting himself to just one part of the congregation. All of the Galatians received the Spirit when they heard the message of the gospel, chapter 3, verses 2 and verse 5. They all enjoy Abraham's blessing because they've received the promise of the Spirit, chapter 3, verse 14. God has given them his Spirit because they are his sons, chapter 4, verse 6. They live by the Spirit, chapter 5, verse 25. Therefore, as those who are walking by the Spirit, chapter 5, verse 16, are led by the Spirit, chapter 5, verse 18, and are keeping in step with the Spirit, chapter 5, verse 25, they are to reestablish those who have fallen. You who are of the Spirit, in other words, you Christians that I've been talking to about that, how you have the Spirit and walk in the Spirit for this whole letter, you, by the Spirit, are called to restore those who have been caught. Again, this is not the leaders. It's not a certain elite group. All of us are given the Spirit, and part of why we're given the Spirit is so that we can restore a brother or sister who has fallen by the fruit of the Spirit. So, who, just like bear each other's burdens, was given to the whole congregation, if anyone is caught in a transgression, you who have the Spirit and are walking by the Spirit should restore that person. How? In a spirit of gentleness. Where have we just seen this word gentleness? Maybe we didn't see it just now because we didn't read it, but just a few verses earlier. The fruit of the Spirit, right? One of the fruits of the Spirit is gentleness, the same word. Ah, that's why it needs to be you who have the Spirit, right? Because you have to restore this person by means of the fruit of the Spirit, with gentleness that comes from the Spirit. Bear each other's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Do this, walk in love, right? Walk in the Spirit, walk by the fruit of the Spirit of gentleness. Paul, actually Jesus himself, speaks of himself as someone characterized by gentleness. In Matthew 11, verse 29, take my yoke upon you and learn from me because I am gentle and lowly in heart. Paul, in 2 Corinthians 10, writes, I entreat you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. So, this is an interesting scenario. Our sin takes many different forms, and it needs to be handled in different ways. There are sometimes blatant, unrepentant, ongoing sin that needs to be dealt with a lot more strongly and maybe harshly than this. But this scenario pictures something that's really common. Us falling into a trap of sin. It's something we're remorseful about. It's not something we really wanted, but we need to help to get untangled and to get back on the path, right? And Paul says, you who have the Spirit, by the fruit of the Spirit, gentleness, imaging Christ, help that person out of the trap. Now you say, well, that's nice. That's very nice, vague in general. But what are some specifics? Well, in good fashion, we will say, it depends, right? It's very helpful. It depends. But first, I can't really answer that question too much. But I'll say this. First, we have to notice. I'm going to let you in on a personal secret. Okay? Most of my sin occurs between Monday and Saturday of every week. Which is interesting. I mean, it's not very interesting, actually. But the issue, you see the problem here, is that if you only see me or contact me on Sunday morning, you're not really going to be very helpful with this, are you? Right? If sort of by definition, six and a half sevenths of my sinning is at a time when I'm not in contact with any of you, it's going to be pretty hard for you to see that I've been caught in a trap and gently restore me, right? I might not even realize that I've been caught. And this is why in Hebrews chapter 3, the author says to exhort each other daily in order to avoid sin's deceitfulness. It's the same with other needs, right? 1 John chapter 3 says, if anyone sees a brother or a sister in need, and then he goes on about how we should and shouldn't handle that. But the first step is we have to see it, right? And so what are the specifics? What does it mean to be able to restore someone or to be able to bear burdens? Well, there's a lot of details. There's a lot of specifics. But maybe one question for us to ask is, how can we bear the burdens of people that we see for just like 2 hours a week? It's kind of hard. And I think some of us do well, really well, with keeping connected and stuff like that. That's wonderful. And I want to see that sort of spread to all of us. Remember why this is a priority. Because this is part of how we fulfill the law of Christ. This is part of how we image what Jesus has done for us. There's a warning that Paul gives here that reminds us of the other warnings we already talked about. If anyone is caught in transgression, you who are spiritual should restore that person, but keep watch on yourself, lest you too are tempted. It's a reminder that just like all the burdens that we are called to bear, when we restore someone, or try to restore someone who's been caught in a net of sin, we are called to do so in love and humility, right? I'm doing this today, but tomorrow it might be them pulling me out of a trap. And the result, for this little example of pulling someone out of the trap that they've got stuck in, fulfilling the law of Christ, right? Giving of ourselves to restore brothers and sisters who've fallen into sin is a beautiful portrayal of the gospel, right? It's like a mini enactment of Jesus giving himself to redeem us from sin at tremendous cost to himself. Love as I have loved you. Bear one another's burdens, and by doing so, fulfill the law of Christ. So that's one example at maybe one end of the spectrum, very spiritual kind of need. Then there's one more example that we'll look at very quickly on sort of a very different end of the spectrum, more financial or more like time-oriented or logistical-oriented maybe. But it is equally an example of what it means to bear each other's burdens and fulfill the law of Christ. And this second example is in verse 6. It seems like a weird throw-in verse here, but I think it's another aspect for Paul of what bearing each other's burdens looks like. One who is taught the word must share all good things with the one who teaches. Okay? So we can call this the give ice cream to your pastor's rule. Paul speaks here of how we are called to help bear the burdens of those that we have burdened to bear, to, right, in the church. Paul really believes in this. He talks in other places about how it's really important to look after our leaders and make sure that they're cared for sort of financially and socially and in other ways. 1 Corinthians 9, the Lord has commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should receive their living from the gospel. Or in Romans 15, if the Gentiles have shared in the Jews' spiritual blessings, they owe it to the Jews to share with them their material blessings. So this example is a call for us to share the burden bearing that we've given our leaders responsibility to bear, help kind of bear burdens of the church. But Paul says that's not the end of the story, right? You're called then to turn around and help them bear the burdens that we, the church, have put upon them, right? And so, you know, we can think of this as in terms of financial. That's kind of our sort of minds go there first. And that's important. And that's something I think our church has sort of done better at in the last number of years. Something we need to kind of keep thinking about. But I like to always say that time is the new money, right? In some societies, in some places, money is extremely hard to come by. In others, time is extremely hard to come by, right? And I think in our culture, time might be a little harder to come by than money, for at least some of us. And so I think it's really important. The text says, let the one who is taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches. Not just make sure you give them a little money, but make sure that we give them the support, the prayer, the time, right? That they need so that we are not burdening them without sharing that burden, right? It's also another little secret. There's a selfish component to this too. It says, let the one who is taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches. But you know what happens when we don't sort of pick up the tab enough and help bear the burdens of our leaders in the church? We actually don't get as much of the exhortation, the prayer, the teaching that they want to give, right? Because their schedule is just jammed with more administrative stuff, right? Or other things that could be maybe part of our job, right? In fact, that's the original reason in Acts 7 for deacons originally was the apostles realized there are some real burdens that need to be met here. But if we do it, that's going to eat into our time that we need to spend in prayer and study and preaching, right? So, let the one who is taught the word share all good things with the one who teaches. So I think in this example, again, this is just one other example of what it means to bear burdens broadly. I think our call to action maybe for this particular example is to reflect and say, our pastors, our deacons are burdened down. And are there ways in which maybe we can step up and bear their burdens better, right? Perhaps by saying, how can we give of our time? How can we give of our sort of emotional investment to fulfill the law of Christ, right? So, two examples about this big exhortation, bear one another's burdens, and by doing so, fulfill the law of Christ. There was a church that I spent a bit of time at years ago, and they had this church covenant, they called it, that all new members would sort of recite and sign, and then all the members would recite every once in a while. And I really liked how this covenant had imbued into it this all of the stuff we've been talking about bearing each other's burdens all throughout. So I'm going to read a few excerpts from it in conclusion here as sort of a way for ourselves to think of what Paul is, by the Spirit, is calling us to in our own church. Here's a few excerpts from this covenant that we can think. This is what we're called to, how we're called to live this out. Having, as we trust, been brought by divine grace to repent and believe in the Lord Jesus Christ and to give up ourselves to him, and having been baptized upon our profession of faith, we do now, relying on his gracious aid, solemnly and joyfully renew our covenant with each other. We will work and pray for the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. We will walk together in brotherly love, as becomes the members of a Christian church, exercise an affectionate care and watchfulness over each other, and faithfully admonish and entreat one another as occasion may require. We will not forsake the assembly of ourselves together, nor neglect to pray for ourselves and others. We will rejoice at each other's happiness and endeavor with tenderness and sympathy to bear each other's burdens and sorrows. We will seek by divine aid to live carefully in the world, denying ungodliness and worldly lusts, remembering that we have been buried with Christ in baptism and raised to walk in newness of life. We will work together for the continuance of a faithful gospel ministry in this church as we sustain its worship, ordinances, discipline, and doctrines. We will contribute cheerfully and regularly to the support of the ministry, the expenses of the church, the relief of the poor, and the spread of the gospel to all nations. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. All of this is because of the Christ who is the perfect burden bearer, the one who, as Peter says, bore our sin in his body on the tree, who bore the ultimate burden to free us from sin and death. We read before about how those who are taught should share all good things with the ones who teaches. But Jesus, as the perfect teacher, actually turned that around and shared all good things with us. Jesus is the perfect burden bearer, the perfect teacher. And by the Spirit, we're called to live out of what Jesus has done for us, to fulfill the law of Christ, to live out what has always been God's heart for his people, shown in the Old Testament, but the law of Christ, to remind each other of God's love for us, the one who took the form of a slave, who loved me and gave himself for me. Bear one another's burdens. Love one another as I have loved you. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for this exhortation that Paul gave to a group of churches so many years ago, but which still is fresh and important for us to listen to today. And most important, we thank you for the fact that we're not just given exhortations, but we are the people whose burdens have been borne and are being borne by Jesus himself. We thank you that we don't just follow an example of a good teacher and a good exemplar, but that we are people who say, he loved me and gave himself for me. And help us to love one another as Jesus has loved us. Amen.